Voilà, on fait ça.
Délicieux.
And welcome to the EdTech Roundup.
Episode 8. We're going to make it.
We made it.
We have made it.
Past the 7-year itch.
The seven episode itch.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just getting better every week. That's kind of the deal.
Absolutely. So, how you guys doing over there?
Fantastic.
Doing well.
It's rainy. It's starting to get a little chilly. Little Kansas winter rolling in, but probably nothing you know anything about being in Colombia. How's the weather?
It's same as always. It's 100 degrees with 100% humidity.
That's good, I guess. Just always bring a shirt to change into.
Let's talk about something else. Not the heat. Our music tonight, obviously, in honor of the late, great Lou Reed, who passed this week.
I have gone through a very long Velvet Underground phase in my life, and a Lou Reed connection there, and listen to all his solo stuff. But you know, the man had his demons, definitely. And I'm reading a lot of stuff about him, and you know, he was definitely his own entity. And yeah, but great music came out of that darkness, if you will.
I will, and
you. Yeah. I think you will. So
I will, and agree. You know. Are you more a fan of Velvet Underground or the solo work?
I think if you look at it as two entire things, like. His solo work is, I mean, there's some great stuff like Transformer and the CD that you are going to play a song from later on, you know, enjoyable stuff, but he also just did some throw off, like, was it metal that's just like 4 hours of like drone feedback stuff, you know, or,
right.
I don't know, a little too experimental for my taste.
A few maybe failed experiments, but a lot of also greatness. In there.
Did you ever listen to the CD he did with Metallica?
I thought about it and then thought again. And
it was the best. It was like all the songs were written like around Edgar Allan Poe poetry or something. Or yeah, it was horrible. But yeah, just the Velvet Underground stuff he did was amazing, and through solo stuff. So I'm not going to get emotional here in front of you.
I told myself I wouldn't cry tonight. Uh-oh.
Here's the Lou.
We're getting choppy. Yes.
Is that last week we did? We had the boss.
Yeah, that was.
Or was that too? Was that last week?
It all runs together. So. Who can keep it straight? Hey, who's our guest over there? You got a partner in
this is not a music podcast anyway. So. Our guest tonight is Ethan Roadhorst. Ethan is a lifelong friend of mine, and also an educator. We not only grew up together in the same town, we went to Kansas State together. After I had an unsuccessful attempt at the University of Kansas. I decided to become a teacher at Kansas State University, and he was there, and we roomed together and went through that whole program. And he has been here in Kansas teaching, and we'll get his lowdown later. So, yeah, this is Ethan.
Yeah,
he's on Twitter @HorstRider.
That's right.
Follow him.
And, of course, as always, we'll send out the links to everything we cover and Ethan's Twitter profile at the end of the show. So, you want to start us off with something?
I do. Let me share with you something. I mentioned Techlandia earlier, and I want to say it was the episode that your name and your was it your blog or your Twitter feed that was shouted out to on the wonderful EdTech podcast.
Hi, first on the as always here at the Mid Coast Tech Fest.
I am trying. Here we go. Anyway, this site was shouted out to on the Techlandia podcast, and I believe it was the episode which they gave props to you. Can you see that?
Yes. Yes. Got it.
Quozio. Now, Quozio is
Quozio?
Quozio.com. Quozio, perhaps. Anyway, it's a very simple formatted web tool where you simply enter a quote. And then who said it? You know how on Facebook or Pinterest or Instagram even you see very lovely quotes formatted or put to a background. This site allows you to do that. You just simply enter a quote and you can put it in a proper background. And the way I've been using this in class is we've actually been writing Cinquain poems, which are five-line poems that have a pretty simple format. I won't go into the details on that. If you're very interested, you can Google it or email me or Twitter me. But basically, the kids have been writing these short poems and have been picking a background that they think goes well with what they've written, and then they can. What I've been having to do is just copy and paste it and put it onto our class blog. But you know, if you're a teacher and you want to do it, you can put it onto Pinterest or you can tweet it out or Facebook it. So, I believe so. It should be as far as you can just copy and paste it onto a Word doc. So. You know, it's a pretty simple idea here, but you know, when you put your words, your own words, into a nice, neat little format like this here, kids really, really enjoy that, and they're used to seeing it on social media in this way. So, yeah, I highly recommend Quozio. It's free, and
yeah. That's really nice. Just a simple way to spice up a quote and
yeah,
a cool way to share quotes that they've said with each other or share their favorite quotes from literature or anything like that. Yeah, that's a nice tool.
Exactly. Have you heard of that before? Have you seen that movie?
I probably heard it in that same podcast, but I haven't looked at it since then, so it's nice to see.
Yeah, very easy to use and highly recommend. What do you got? What are you using right now?
I got... Let me share my screen. Can you see that?
S'more.
S'more. Like the snack. Not as tasty. So, S'more is a free site to make flyers. And you can embed videos and links and images and all that sort of stuff. So right now... They are making, I had them make invitations to historical events. I was trying to do a little cross-curricular activity and have them talk about something from history, but then also use this new technology tool. So some kids are I told them, imagine like you're inviting a friend to go back in time and witness a historical event. Create like a flyer invitation for that. So far it's been pretty good. Kids are creating invitations to like the Revolutionary War or the Titanic or the signing of the Declaration of Independence, stuff like that. But it's really easy to use. You've got all your options down here. Add text or a picture, or if you want to put an event in there, audio, video, links, anything you want, you can embed. And then at the end, you can send it out via Facebook or Twitter or embed it on another website or anything like that. But it's a really simple tool to just design flyers that look really nice, and it's easy to use. And you can change the like backgrounds and stuff if you want to, and the colors. So there's some customizability and with it as well. And so far, the students really like it a lot.
Cool.
Yeah.
Would you like me to share an app that I'm using in class?
Yes, please.
Yes, sure.
That's what I've been waiting all night for.
Okay.
These are two from class. Well,
this is something I've tried out a little bit. It's and I'm going to show you this via Air Server. If I can.
Our old friend from last week.
Our old friend Air Server. Oh, here we go. Can you see that okay?
I see your faces, though.
Well, the it's coming. It is so close. The app is called Poems by Heart. Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
Okay. Poems by Heart, and something that I've always wanted to do as a language arts teacher, or back in the day, as we called ourselves, English teachers, wanted to have the moments in class where poems were recited by the students, in, you know, as they were originally written, and to have those kind of Dead Poet Society moments, you know, where the kids were spouting out these words of classic literature. I know the days of that have kind of come and gone, but I still think there is so much love, even by middle school kids, for wanting to be a part of kind of that classic style writing and literature. So this app, brought to you by Penguin Books, and if I can get the, there's kind of the main page of it. It's called Poem by Heart, and basically it's a way to learn and in turn practice memorizing and reciting classic poems. And hopefully, so there's, they kind of have them categorized from easy to a little more difficult, and we have medium, Shall I Compare Thee to a Summer's Day by Shakespeare. But then there's also, there's a store where you can go in. There's not a lot offered by the free app. I mean, there's several enough well-known poems, but you can go in and if your school is grateful enough, or a student's parents would purchase more, you can go to the store and buy a lot more. Kind of, it's done by theme. You can buy poems by theme, and just, you can hear it. I won't play anything, but you can hear it. Recited by someone else, and then you can break it up into chunks and have, you know, like a stanza read, and then you can record it back to yourself so you can practice it and listen to it. So it's just a really simple tool in, you know, kind of practicing and reciting poetry. It's not something that in language arts class we probably spend as much time doing and appreciating as a class would have done 20 years ago, but I really like this, and I think there is a need for it and a student desire to connect with the classic stuff. So this is a really cool app. It's called Poems by Heart. It's sponsored by Penguin Classics, a great line of books, a publishing company. So, highly recommend Poems by Heart.
That's awesome. That's a really, yeah, awesome. That's really cool for getting kids into poetry, but with a modern touch to it, and that they can listen to it and record themselves and hear the poem being read to them. That's great.
Yeah. What do you got?
What do I got? My last one, and then we'll toss it over to Ethan, is... Boom. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Alchemy is the company. SmartBinder is the product. It's a new web app that's awesome for flipped classrooms, and if you've got like one-to-one type of classroom or BYOD where students have access to technology devices in the classroom. It's a great way for putting your digital content together in a lesson and sending it out to the students. So if you're going to make a lesson, you give it a title, how much time it's going to take in class and at home, and then what you can do is add all sorts of resources to the lesson. Links and videos. Sorry, hang on 1 second. Plus. There we go. So you can add text to the lesson or images, or you could upload files that you have. If you've got Word documents or PowerPoints or whatever, you can upload videos or anything on the web, you can link to it. And you can add questions to give to them also, and then send it out. And they have access to their own account where they can view all this digital information that you sent to them and complete it and answer the questions and all that stuff. And you can link it to the Common Core standards, or you can upload your own. If you've got different standards you want to upload, you can add those to it also. So it's a really great way for sharing digital content with students in your class.
Awesome. Anything that you can link to Common Core standards?
I mean, these days, helps.
Money in the bank.
Automatic, you know. I think teachers are realizing that too. It's like, oh my gosh, if I can just have this kind of like, if I can have this technology and something that useful, and obviously,
and it makes my job easier and faster. Yeah.
No-brainer. It's what we like to call in the podcast a no-brainer.
Trademark? So, can we trademark that?
No-brainer. I'll write that down.
Okay, very good. Well, let me start this off, our guest interview, Ethan Rodehorst, a sixth grade science teacher at Eudora, Kansas Middle School. And just to start out, Ethan, would you tell us a little bit about when you started teaching? I'm sure I know it's been a few years.
It's been a few. It's getting up there.
What was the technology like in the classroom in the schools that you started out in?
This would be my ninth year of teaching currently, and I'm trying to think back to my first classroom. I started out in a third grade classroom, actually. That's my first experience. I believe my technology would have been an overhead projector and a desktop computer. And
were those connected to each other?
No. 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 Not even close. No.
Okay.
No. No. From there, I went to, that was in Topeka, Kansas, and then when I went to Beloit, Kansas, and taught 7th and 8th grade science, which I was there actually a year ago. It's my first year in Eudora. I spent 5 years in Beloit, and my first year in Beloit, I had, a chalkboard.
Oof.
And an overhead projector on a cart.
Okay.
So, but then by my last year in Beloit, I had a smart board, a laptop, a desktop, and an iPad. So within 5 years, within 5 years, it changed tremendously.
So how did that change happen? Did your school handle it pretty well as far as professional development goes? Were you able to incorporate all that new technology? Was it a smooth process?
I wouldn't say it was the smoothest. I was new to the smart board, and I learned on the fly for sure. I still, to this day, I know I didn't and can't use a smart board to its fullest potential because of the training and time provided, for sure. There was also a time when I was in Beloit where we added a good amount of laptops and carts, and our bandwidth was not prepared for those additions. So that was a growing process as well. I should mention my current technology situation in Eudora is I have a Promethean board and I have a laptop for my classroom. The kids have access to laptops via carts. We have a cart that has 25 laptops per grade level, and then we have two extra carts that can be checked out at any time.
Is it usually pretty easy to get one, or are the teachers kind of fighting over those carts?
You have to plan ahead. I mean, it's basically just to sign up by calendar, and teachers tend to sign up for them for an extended period of time, whether they need them or not. So you have to kind of be on top of your game to get dibs on the computers.
Yeah.
Funny though, like in schools where technology is, I guess. Well, I mean, most places now are getting up to speed enough to meet the kids' needs, but it's like you have your teachers who are, you know, have been there long enough and they're so set in their ways that they don't want to utilize the things, and you have the teachers who kind of want to utilize things, and you have the teachers like me who want to check things out every day, so it kind of... You know, even if your school doesn't have like a one-to-one situation, then it still kind of works itself out because there's just those divides on teachers who want to do you know certain things, and communication is key as far as that goes.
Right, but yeah, there usually is kind of that natural balance, at least in my experience of, like you said, teachers who want to use it and then teachers who don't care as much, and it does work itself out a lot. Here's a question for you, Ethan, about your last school. When you started getting that technology in the classroom, did you notice any changes with student engagement, with how they approached the lessons when you started using that technology? Did it help? Did they like it? How did that go?
I think the kids totally embrace it, and not only embrace it, but I think they expect it. Even if I was using the smart board as a glorified projector, delivering content electronically, I think that's just what they're used to. And like I said, I think they began to expect it. Especially, I mean, at that point I was, and maybe still now, considered a younger teacher, where they expect you to utilize some technology. Being a science teacher, I incorporate lots of clips of videos that are so accessible. You know, YouTube is so easy to find any science demonstration, or, you know, it's so much easier to make things real with technology instead of talking about it, showing them with a smart board or Promethean board is definitely advantageous for me.
Definitely. That's a really good point. They do expect it. I mean, it's what they're surrounded by outside of the classroom, and then to come into a classroom where even maybe the teacher has access to those resources, but they choose not to use them, there's a bit of a disconnect between their life outside of the classroom and in the classroom. And yeah, good point.
I have a question for the two of you, since Michael has a science background as well. I feel like there are so many good, like, whether it's biology related or even, I don't know, chemistry or something. The apps available to the science field are really engaging and really just more so. There's just this in number. There's a lot more than for kids to use and get on. I feel like the science, as compared to language arts, I feel like the language arts ones are kind of, you know, they are what they are, and they're. But I feel like for you to be able to utilize those as a science teacher, am I wrong in assuming that they're kind of stepping the game up of the science teachers in the.
From what I've seen, yeah, there's, and maybe it's the fact that, you know, science lends itself to labs, which are in general hands-on, and so there's, on the internet at least, there's tons of web-based simulations for experiments that maybe you can do in your classroom, and those are starting to get also translated into the app market as well, where you can do these, you know, a frog dissection or a chemistry experiment and all that kind of stuff. That maybe you don't have the resources in the classroom, but now you can do it on an app, and it's still, it's not the same experience, but it's close enough where you can at least get some of the idea and some of the critical thinking from it and the problem solving. But yeah, you're right. There are a ton of options for science content on the web and in apps.
I've been to some workshops too within the last year. With iPad training, and there are a lot of apps out there for science. It's though finding some that are appropriate for age level and the content. There are a lot to filter through for middle school, especially sixth graders. I've struggled to find ones that are appropriate. I find more for secondary most of the time. So I pass those along to secondary science teachers generally, especially some really good ones for like anatomy. They're just fantastic ones. Dissections, like Michael already mentioned, are really good, or cell models and things like that. The other thing I struggle with now, and did at Beloit, is, well, I have to use my own personal iPad, and even if it's something that the kids can manipulate, it becomes, I have a classroom of 20, or if they want to manipulate an application, then they have to go one at a time, and sixth graders are not the most patient. So it becomes a time issue and the classroom management issue for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And that is hard to find. We talked a little bit last week about a new site, Apo Learning, that does a really awesome job of categorizing apps by subject level and by grade level and giving them really good reviews and ratings that tell you exactly what content's in the app. So sites like that can help. But
which,
yeah, there's still
as I look at Apple Learning right now, and the very first article that pops up, The Keys to Combining Mobile Learning Devices in the Classroom by Michael Carlin.
It's
congratulations.
I'm also writing for them. Full disclosure. It is an awesome site.
Yeah, I've already used it. I think, did you mention it in your blog just this week or even really recently?
I think it was over the weekend or yeah.
And yeah, I mean this is great, and the reviews, I mean, it's just anything that can kind of weed through that the time spent of apps that are just like, you know, not applicable or, you know, not cost effective or something. It's just, you know, we need more of this kind of thing, and this is, Apple Learning's great. So
yeah. Ethan, have you come across any favorites that you've liked for that work in your classroom or that you've passed on to other teachers?
I'm actually teaching different science content this year than I was the last 5 years. So I haven't really discovered anything for what I'm currently teaching. Like, I used to, I don't remember, there was one with the periodic table of elements that is really interactive. I think it might be a Nova. I think Nova might have an app that's for the periodic table that's really good. It's just more than what sixth graders need. I just passed along, I don't remember, maybe it was also, Nova has fantastic apps. for science. I think it was another one of theirs that I passed along to the anatomy teacher where I used to teach. Were some recent ones that I come across for science.
Yeah, they definitely do have some good ones. So, what do you usually rely on in your day-to-day? You said you've got the iPad, you've got the Promethean board, the laptops. What's your go-to?
I use the Promethean board even now. Well, unfortunately, I'm kind of in the same situation with the Promethean as then, you know, starting the school year, as far as getting trained on how to use a Promethean, the school year starts, and you're already kind of behind as far as learning how to use Promethean software. And so I use a lot of slideshows that incorporate a lot of videos, images and clips and things like that. I have my Promethean on all day long, and so whether it's using it for bell work or any sort of directions, it's always being utilized as far as that goes.
Yeah. Nice. We talk a lot about different apps and sites and stuff, but there's something about videos and images, especially in the science, like just being able to see a video of mitosis or, you know, the cell membrane or any simple concept like that, actually being able to see a video of it is incredibly powerful in and of itself.
I will say that any time, like, if I have iPads checked out, to my kids, and they have, like, a couple minutes at the end of class to use it freely, they are either using GarageBand or they are doing the frog dissection. Like, they can never get enough of the frog dissection app. So,
they love it.
Yeah, I don't know, you guys, you science guys. I don't know what to tell you.
And Saul may have already shared at some point on another pod that an app I use that's not necessarily science related. You could use this as a teacher or a coach for a communication app. Actually, it's an app, but it's also could be used through email. But Remind 101 is something I just tried starting this school year. I knew about it for at least the prior school year, but hadn't actually used it. But Remind 101 is just a communication device you can use. I use it as an app on my phone, where I send out texts to students or parents for any type of reminder or any way to communicate to them anything I want them to know about what's happening in the classroom. And I've been really pleased how the kids really like it. In fact, I told them, I said, I'm not going to send out a lot. I'm not going to bother you every day with reminders, but only the important things. And they can't get enough. They actually would prefer something almost every day. So sometimes they're not even reminders. They're just, you know, share with your parents about a science demonstration you saw today, or share something about physical versus chemical changes today with your parents. And I've been really pleased with the reaction from the kids. But it's just a text message they can receive on their phone, or they can receive it as an email. And it's just a one-way communication device, so they cannot respond back to me. They just receive the message.
That's awesome. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit before with Saul, but you bring it to kind of a whole new level. It can really help bring the parents into the classroom and connect the students with the parents with the content that you're teaching in the classroom. That's an awesome idea of just, hey, remember, here's what we did today. Why don't you share it with your parents?
Yeah, some parents at conferences, even they brought it up and they said, you know, our son or daughter, they come home and they look at their phone and they, you know, they'll say, you know, Mr. Roadhorse hasn't given us a reminder in a few days. I don't, you know, and they sit there and they wait for it. So,
and I think if the kid, if the student has the phone too, like at that level in middle school, they might just be getting their first cell phone. So then any kind of correspondence is really, especially from someone as important as their science teacher, you know. So they're making such a big deal out of it. So that yeah, it is really cool. Yeah. I'm a big fan, and I learned about it from this guy. So.
Yep.
Nice. Yeah, that's a great tool. And it's free, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is free.
Great.
I don't understand how so many of these awesome services are free and they're advertisement free. I don't get it, but I love it.
Yeah. I told some people at my school about it, and for instance, like the yearbook teacher, she's using it so she can remind all the yearbook kids when they're having meetings. You know, I think that's where I heard it first was from coaches, so they could tell, you know, when last minute practice is canceled due to the weather, or it's just fantastic, and it takes, you know, any if someone's not feeling comfortable sharing their cell phone number or their email address, you know, with kids or parents, then that takes it away. So.
Yeah, the anonymity of it coming from you is kind of the nice thing about it. I mean, if there's a urgent response back from them, you know, it that can't happen. But yeah, just you know, you're sending out these basic informational things, and it works so well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But like if you have kids who want to bring in crazy things for a Halloween party like they do in Colombia, and then maybe you can tell them it's okay. You can send out a text message.
Or just remind them, like, remember, here's what you can bring tomorrow. Here's just silly string.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Scarier.
Yeah, that's I've used it just to remind them, you know, picture day is tomorrow. Just simple things like that. Well, simple to me, but yeah, I think evidently they enjoy getting simple numbers.
Don't forget your comb and your hair gel.
Right.
I remember Ethan told me one time, he's like, yeah, I sent out tonight this, having the kid ask their parent a question about, you know, something science related, and then bring the response back with them to school or something like that, you know, so that's really cool. It's really easy and simple, and it's a way to check, let them be a little more active outside of class. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. You science guys.
Do you want me to throw out one more science thing?
Throw it out. Yeah.
We're good. I'm maxed.
It relates to literacy, so you might like it.
Okay.
I ran into a magazine that you can purchase called The Skeptic. The Skeptic, which involves skepticism in the science field, and every month they have it's really for adults, but they have one section every month that is directed or targeted for kids. For sixth graders, for mine it might be difficult, or it will be difficult. I haven't had the chance to use it, but will be. For the higher level readers, it will be right on target, but it'll definitely take some assistance from a teacher for sixth grade wise. But I'd say sixth through eighth, it would definitely have some language arts connections, some Common Core, and obviously science. But it talks about skepticism in the science field. And the first one I looked at had like 10 different general myths and the skepticism behind myths, so like Loch Ness Monster, UFOs, Bigfoot, and things like that, and talks about the science behind are things actually real or not.
Published. You're not saying that Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot are myths, right?
Right, no, they're totally real.
Okay. That was good.
Michael's getting concerned.
That's a whole different podcast.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, skepticism is so important, especially in the sciences, and finding here's a theory, but maybe there's alternative views, and maybe we should look at all the evidence before we decide on stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's great. Skeptic Magazine.
Yes.
Okay. Saul, was that okay? Right, are you over maxed now?
Oh my god. Like I think I need to practice some of my poetry on poems by heart. Make me feel a little more liberal arty. No offense, guys.
None taken.
We're okay.
Yeah. All right, Mike, what do you got? Anything else? Anything you need to share?
That's all I got. How about you guys?
I think we're good.
Then let's end this thing. Right?
Let's end it. Let's hear it. Your selection.
All right, we're going out with Sally Can't Dance. A little poppier side to Lou Reed. Rumor has it he wasn't a big fan of this album. But I love it, so we're going with it.
I saw the album cover, because I'd never heard the song, and I looked at it.
Yeah, it's poppy.
Sally dances on the floor. She says that she...
Thanks for watching.
She walks down St. Mark's Place and eats natural food at my place. Now Sally can't dance no more. She can't get it off of the floor. Sally can't dance no more.